Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another two-hour session of Zero Point Radio. I come from Ottawa, Canada area, and I work independently as a psychologist and mystic scientist. I work under the logo of Zero Point, which is a term actually taken from the secret doctrine of H.P. Blavatsky, a classic book of modern occultism, which was published in 1888. It was described by Manly Hall as undoubtedly the magnus opus of the literature of the modern world. So at Zero Point, it's an institute for mystical and spiritual science, and I'm interested in particularly the issues of the nature and origin of human consciousness, and I elaborate the heart doctrine, which is the viewpoint or belief that the human self-existence originates out of the higher dimensions of the human heart, and that the heart, rather than the mind in the head, is our essential self. The self that we want to attain knowledge of or experience of is the self within the heart. And this heart doctrine teaching, it's in mystical Christianity, Judaism and Kabbalah, Sufism and Islam. It's taught by the Dalai Lama and numerous other esoteric teachings, such as the secret doctrine. So the most important idea is that a human being's self-existence originates out of the heart, and the mind in the head is seen as secondary to the self within the heart. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "I am the self seated in the hearts of all living beings." So the idea is that we have a spiritual element, our I, and it's connected to the heart and the higher dimensional physics of the heart. And you might say, well, what do you mean by higher dimensional physics? Well, even in modern science, scientists now no longer simply conceive of four large dimensions, three of space and one of time, but they also believe that underlying the four-dimensional space-time complex is a seven-dimensional hyperspace. And new theories in physics propose an 11-dimensional universe. There are variations of this, but now this concept that we live, that there is an underlying seven-dimensional hyperspace, is one of the key ideas taught by Madame Blavatsky in 1888 in The Secret Doctrine. And she claimed everything in nature, everything physical and metaphysical, is septenary or sevenfold in nature. So that when creation occurs, there are seven distinct planes of being, seven distinct vibratory levels of creation. Thus, a human being has seven chakras. Within the periodic tables of science, we have seven rows of elements. So throughout the mystical literature, we find this archaic principle of the sevenfoldness of creation. And it's even in the in our Bible. God created the earth and the heavens within 6 days and rested on the seventh. So again, the creation process is described as sevenfold. So through these lectures, I explore the issues of consciousness. We discuss creation physics, issues in the debate between science and religion. As well, we discuss at times the contemporary issue and crisis in the life of humankind. There has to be an awakening of human consciousness if we throughout the world are going to redeem our planet and our nations from the terrible things which are being carried out now around the world, part of what I would call the New World Psychiatric Disorder. Most people just refer to it as the New World Order. I refer to it as the New World Psychiatric Disorder, because the people who are precipitating this New World Psychiatric Disorder I really, from a clinical psychology perspective, are criminally insane. You know, these people who would spray us with chemtrails from the air, imagine that, spraying everybody with pollutants and aluminum and barium and desecrated blood particles and spraying the people all across the land and putting these pollutants into the air and the water and the lungs. You know, your children play outside and they get their taste of chemtrails on a daily basis. The things being done by the New World Order are so disturbed that is why I would call them the New World Psychiatric Disorder. And there's a famous quotation that I'll read from, this is from J. Edgar Hoover, who was at the time the head of the FBI. And he once made the comment, I'm trying to find this quote, sorry. Oh, yeah, he was J. E. Hoover. He said, "The individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists." And that, in a way, is the situation humankind is in today. There is a conspiracy so monstrous that it's hard to face it and believe that it exists. But it has for centuries, and we live in precarious times now because of the agenda of these psychopaths who have this New World Psychiatric Disorder. So anyway, we have wide-ranging discussions, and we have a two-hour show. In the first half today, I'll be with the regular co-host, James Moffat, from Toronto, Ontario. And in the second half, I'm honored to have Andrew Molden, who is the new leader of the Canadian Action Party. He's just been voted into leadership within the last month and is just taking over the responsibilities of that office at this time. And people in the Canadian Action Party are very excited by having such a capable and eloquent individual as Andrew represent us. And I say us because I joined the Canadian Action Party. Normally through my life I've never been political. I've never been too interested in politics and such. And I'm ashamed to say I only woke up about over 2 years ago when my 15-year-old son had me view the movie Loose Change, which was a rude awakening for me to realize that the whole thing of 9/11 had been a complete fraud and that this had been perpetrated on the people of North America and the world. Even though now around the world people are realizing that Osama bin Laden and his reindeer did not bring down those fancy towers. The whole thing was a public deception. And the lie is carried on. It's like there's a collective delusional system which has taken over the American psyche. So we're in very serious times. Anyway, Jim, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you, Chris?
Okay. It's cold up here.
Oh, yeah. It's been chilly in Toronto the last few days, too, but it's December, so, you know, Canada.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anyone's yet figured out whether we're getting global warming or global cooling.
Yeah,
I think there's really more evidence that we're getting global cooling.
I don't.
No?
Oh, no, I think the evidence is pretty strong that the planetary temperature is rising. I think I don't think actually there's any doubt that that's the case. I think the bigger problem is what exactly is causing it. I mean,
what's causing it? Yeah.
Well, a variety of sorts. I mean, there's just too many people on the planet. That's one problem. I mean, I think that you know, the standard argument is probably correct to a point, but I think it might be a little more complicated than people have said. It's an interesting question to look into. We had a gentleman from Ottawa U on about a year ago, and he had some very interesting things to say about climate change and sort of putting out a different a different explanation as to what was going on, and questioning some of the assumptions of the people who just sort of attributed it to, you know, to fossil fuels and too much carbon emissions. I think that is a problem, but I'm not clear that. I don't think, in a way, it's interesting. I remember reading about 10 years ago that really the biggest greenhouse gas is water vapor. That's the most prevalent greenhouse gas. And in modeling what's going on, computer simulations with climate change, that's the biggest variable. It's the most difficult one to model in terms of computer simulations. So I think, you know, when people are making pronouncements, they have to be very careful to remember that, you know, this is all based on certain understandings. I think the observations are there about global warming. I mean, the polar caps, the amount of open ice at open water now, where there were huge, you know, ice sheets before, I think is pretty strong indication that some profound changes are occurring on the planet. But as to what's causing them, you know, as I say, I think it's probably a little bit more complicated than we understand. I mean, I think part of it might actually be a natural cycle, but at the same time, I think, you know, as I say, I think there's just too many people on the planet, and that might be, and the burning of fossil fuels, I think, is really an enormous problem. It's an enormous problem for a variety of other reasons, like, which have nothing to do with global warming, but, you know, that's a whole other issue. But I wanted to actually pick up on something that you just mentioned in your introduction when you referred to the heart doctor. Then you made reference to the idea that this is something that's essentially, it's a central idea of esoteric teachings throughout the ages, is that the center of a human being is within the heart, and that human beings arise out of these higher dimensional spaces, and that consciousness informs the human body and human mind from these higher dimensions through the heart. And you made reference to the Dalai Lama. And I thought it would be, I don't really know the Dalai Lama's, I know some of the things that he says, but I'm not really that familiar with what he actually says. Could you just expand a little bit on that, like, or make a comment as to what he says about the heart doctrine?
Okay. Yeah, he refers to what he calls the indestructible drop, which is described as the size of a small pea, and it's associated with the heart, and it is permanent during the time of life in the body. And he says, from the heart, there are three channels, the Ida Pingala and Sushumna, which interconnect the system of seven chakras. So we go from the one in the heart through the three channels to the seven chakras, in accord with what I say is this magical formula of the universe, 1, 3, 7. That same pattern, which is interesting how that depicts the nature of light. If we think of white light entering a three-sided prism, and it gives us a spectrum of seven colors. Well, similarly, there's an inner distribution of light consciousness from the heart within the human being through this subtle anatomy of the chakras and what are called nadis, which are the subtle channels in the subtle body. So the Dalai Lama describes the indestructible drop as where life originates originally in the fetus in the womb. And so the heart forms first, and then the energies are distributed from the indestructible drop all out through the body. And there are knots tied in these channels which prevent the return of these energies into the indestructible drop. And the Dalai Lama describes, for instance, at death. He says what happens at death is a person's hands and feet get cold, and all the vital energies withdraw into the Ida and Pingala, which are the side channels, and then they all gather into the Sushumna, the central channel, and all the energies return into the heart. And as the energies return into the heart, the soul leaves the body. And as the life force returns into the heart, the Dalai Lama describes the person as having access to the memory of their life, as though all the things that happened to you in your life, all that information and awareness is still latent or potent in the space of the heart. in a way it keeps an Akashic record of everything that happens through our lives. So as consciousness withdraws into the heart, we can experience this panoramic review of our life. So those are a few, Jim, things the Dalai Lama says about the subtle anatomy.
Yeah, so it's basic. I mean, those are central yogic teachings.
Yes, they're in yoga, exactly the same in yoga.
Variety of traditions, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because Maurice Nicol was the first person I read who said that there is an ancient esoteric maxim that God is first one, then three, then seven. And I mean, it's such an interesting formula to apply to on a variety of levels to phenomena, as you say, like the basic phenomena of light and then the parallel with human consciousness. It's so intriguing how this repeats itself. Eh?
Yeah, this idea of the one, three, seven. Yeah. And it's so interesting how you can apply that kind of thinking, you can apply it so widely once you comprehend it. Like, for instance, take space. What is the nature of space? Even just considering our ordinary everyday space. Mm. Now, normally, we can just think of space. It's a one. It's a unitary. It's a thing in itself. Space is a one. But then in science, we consider that we live in three-dimensional space, because any point in space around us can be represented as a function of three coordinates, your X, Y, and Z axes. So you can consider space as threefold. And then in the Native American Indian tradition, some natives discuss the sevenfold nature of space. And you could honor the directions, the east and the west, and the north and the south, above and below, and the seventh direction is within your own heart. Because the seventh direction is really the origin, it's the zero point within your own heart. So, space itself can be considered as a unitary phenomena, as three-dimensional, or as having a seven-dimensional nature. And you can apply that kind of thinking to analyzing different things. For example, what is the nature of the material world? Well, now we know that matter is composed of protons, electrons, and neutrons, three basic elements. And they form atoms in seven rows of elements on the periodic tables. So again, we see the 1, 3, 7 pattern. And then we see it in the distribution of light. You take white light divided by a three-sided prism and you get a spectrum of seven colors. And then you can apply the same thinking to analyzing time. Because we can think of time, firstly, as there being the past, the present, and the future. That's the threefold nature of time. And then Blavatsky would argue that all cycles in history repeat sevenfold patterns. So there are seven ages. I guess Shakespeare talked of the seven ages of man, I think. Are you familiar with that, Jim, where you begin by mewling and puking in the mother's arms, and then being a whining schoolboy going off to school, and then the lover sighing like a furnace, and the seven ages of men.
That's where it goes. I had a class. I'd forgotten all that. Yeah, that's right.
And so Gurdjieff talks about seven levels of human beings, and he says most men and women are man number 1, 2, or 3, according to whether their physical, emotional, or mental development is most dominant. But he says very few people develop physically, emotionally, and mentally simultaneously and undergo a transformation to become what he calls a man number 4, which is the first level of the four higher types. So Gurdjieff would say there's a man number 4 who has experiences of self-consciousness and the awakening of the heart and the experience of what Gurdjieff calls a higher emotional center. So there can be the opening of the heart, and then the light of the heart can illuminate the higher centers so that people might attain the powers connected to the throat chakra or the brow chakra or the crown chakra. But ideally, a person in your development, you want to firstly develop and stabilize the three lower centers to get to the level of the heart. And the awakening of the heart is like the beginning of the mystical life. Even though other people at times bypass the heart and can open higher centers, but in a way that can lead to an unproductive or difficult adjustment afterwards, like Gopi Krishna, who brought his kundalini up through his brow chakra, and Gopi Krishna had to be looked after by his disciples and carried around for months and be fed by everybody because he was so dissociated from his body that he couldn't function in the material world. And most people wouldn't want that. I personally wouldn't. In a way, we want to... The fourth way is a system of development for people under the conditions of ordinary life. We want to be in the world, but not of the world. So those, Jim, yeah, that's a fascinating quotation from Nickel, the Gurdjieff Uspensky student, where he says, God is first one, then three, then seven. I remember hearing that like 25 years ago, and that, you know, helped to crystallize my understanding.
Yeah, there's another interesting parallel, as you say, like in Gurdjieff's typology, there's seven different levels of human beings, and the three lower human beings are differentiated according to type, and then these higher levels that we can aspire to and we can develop by developing our consciousness and being. And then there's another aspect of it when he talks about that human beings feed on three classes of being foods, and there's air, and then there's food as we normally understand it, which covers a wide variety of substances we take in. And then there's psychological impressions. And he says that all three of these foods are necessary for the maintenance of the life principle and consciousness in a human being. And then he has these very interesting, very intricate diagrams where he explains that these substances come into a human being, and then they're refined. And in this sense, he says that human beings can be likened to an alchemical factory where there's this refinement through various processes which interact amongst the three octaves of impressions that come in. And these different foods come in, and they proceed, they evolve according to an octave progression. So there's a scale of seven notes. So these three, the one becomes three and enters and unfolds through these seven notes of the individual octaves. At various points, the octaves of the different classes of foods interact and help prompt the fulfillment of the other octaves. But according to Gurdjieff, we're incomplete in the sense that we need to provide two shocks which for the octaves to complete themselves, for us to feed on the highest classes of being food. So one of the shocks is to self-remember, we have to refine the level of our psychological impressions by being more present and by being more aware of ourselves being here. And then a second shock, which he doesn't actually identify, but which I think is tied somehow to the remembrance of the inevitability of our death and of that of everyone around us. It's sort of a higher emotional process. Fulfills the second psychological impression shock necessary to complete an octave. So you have these three classes of being foods, air, food as we normally understand it, and psychological impressions. And Gurdjieff is saying that the life and the consciousness of a human being can vary to wide degrees depending upon the extent to which these foods are refined. Like, nature takes care of things to a certain extent, but we need to make an effort to refine these foods so that we can feed on the highest salivate. They're just as in the digestive process, we, you know, the food enters the mouth and the saliva interacts with the food, and certain enzymes are released, and food is broken down in the stomach and through the whole process of digestion. It's the same thing with psychological impressions, and it's also the same thing with air, and that's why there's such an emphasis in so many traditions on learning to breathe properly. Like Gurdjieff says, people don't generally breathe properly, and that proper breathing is intimately tied with psychological impressions and how we're able to digest them, and also with how we're able to digest food and to draw the highest elements out of this food. Like we sort of assume that nature allows us, you know, to derive all the nutrients from food just by the processes of the human body, but you're just saying it's even more complex than that. So in a way, like, that's a very complex scheme, but it also again falls into this one. It's three classes of being foods, fulfilling an octave process which consists of seven notes. And as I say, he says that the development of consciousness and being are intimately tied to this whole alchemical process that goes on in the human body and in the human mind.
Yeah, it's a fascinating depictions or descriptions he provides of the human being as an alchemical factory. And it's tied in...
It's something I don't see in too many... I'm not really familiar with in other teachings that it is explained this way, but I mean, I see... It makes perfect sense to me that, you know, the more I've studied, the more I realize I don't understand it in certain ways, but generally the scheme is I see the importance of this, that, well, the first conscious shock that you need to develop your psychological impressions is that by remembering yourself, you can change the nature of the impressions on which you subsist, on which you feed, and which you subsist. And
yeah, by being awake, more in a heightened awakeness state,
right,
at the moment of reception of impressions.
Yeah.
He says kind of doubles the value of that being food.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he says it doubles it. So, yeah, so you feed on a kind of a higher vibrational level of psychological impressions, and then this, it can interact with the air octaves at the same time, which can lead to, I mean, this, to me, I'm just sort of thinking out loud here a little bit, but it to me, that's related to the oxygenation of your blood, right? So this would allow you to be sort of vibrating on a higher frequency level, to, for lack of a better term, and you know, it's interacts so intimately with the psychological impressions that you can't in a way really separate them. But I think that's where in a way that's where you need somebody who actually knows what they're talking about in terms of breathing to really instruct people. Like it's a huge topic. It's one that's really not recognized in Western science.
The value of breathing.
Breathing.
I remember I was shocked as a psychologist in all the training I have as a clinical psychologist. No one ever discussed the breath.
Right.
Hardly ever. Even in desensitization and some of the relaxation techniques, there was hardly any emphasis on the breath and understanding the levels of the breath and how most people breathe more in the upper chest and have to learn to let down and breathe more abdominally.
Yeah, other than Reich, I don't think anybody really in Western psychology has ever really attended, and the, you know, bioenergetics, Alexander Lowe, and people that have followed from Reich. But I mean, other than Reich, is there anybody in therapy who really focuses on, because he definitely emphasized the, you know, the importance of breath and how it's related to muscular tension. But it's such a huge oversight in a sense that,
yeah,
especially in therapy and psychotherapy, as you say. And I mean, I used to do this thing about demonstrating it, how little kids, when they're crying and when they're upset, how they hold their breath.
Yeah.
And you used to kind of demonstrate that. It's like such a dramatic, and it's hard to do on the radio, but it's such a dramatic demonstration of anybody when they are upset, you can observe that in yourself. When you're upset, how you hold your breath and how, you know, you're locked into how your emotional state locks you up in terms of your breathing, and then it reinforces your emotional state. It's actually a very good example of the interaction of the psyche and the breath, how they're really intimately connected.
Yeah, and then how that affects the body.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, like, problems with the breath are the main cause of anxiety states and depressive states. Like, people who fall into states of depression, it's like they chronically hold their breath and just maintain that pattern of holding. And I always emphasize in working with the breathing, is emphasize the exhalation. Exhale fully, and then the inhalation will come naturally. But so I see working with breathing and it is like so vitally important to people's emotional well-being, and also in the sense of being present. Like Gurdjieff, we want to be self-remembering, which means being aware of ourselves in any circumstance, at any point in the day, at any place in your life. So you kind of wake up and be more fully present and conscious in the moment. And as you do that, one of the first things you'll be aware of is your breath. So you want to kind of maintain awareness of yourself in your breath. And in Buddhism, Buddhist monks sometimes will try to go through a whole day trying to be aware of every breath. And when I've tried to do that at different times, I find that within minutes it radically alters one's conscious state. As I'm aware of my breath, sometimes I'll go for a walk downtown. If I'm downtown, I'll walk along being aware in my breath as I breathe and just breathing slowly and deeply. And it's as that happens, I have the experience like I'm at the center of a cyclone. And there's that kind of inner peacefulness within me. And around it is all this confusion, and everything in the outer world is around that. It gives a very interesting experience to see in the Gurdjieff fourth way teaching. We want, as we go about our lives, to be self-remembering and then being more awake and aware within the moment, and enhance your breathing at those periods, and that helps enhance your presence in any situation. So in mystical teachings, the soul life is intimately connected to the breath. Like Swami Prabhupada, in explaining the Vedic teachings of India, he says the jiva atma, or the individual spiritual spark, is connected to the heart, and he says the energies of the soul are related to the oxygenation of the blood, and they're distributed through the body, through the blood. So this whole process of the oxygenation of the body and the blood flow is how Swami Prabhupada sees us as being ensouled. See, the ensoulment is different than the spiritual spark within the heart. That spiritual spark has to be connected down to the material body. And that connection down is called the ensoulment. So we have a body, soul, and spirit. And the soul connects the spirit to the body. So, I mean, it's so interesting to, in our discussions of consciousness, Jim, how, you know, we use these experiences, like examples. Like I say to a person in my talks, I get people to put their hands together and see if they're about the same size. And then take their hands apart and put your attention into your dominant hand and just do it for 10 seconds, just being conscious in your hand. If you do that for a short while and then put your hands back together, the hand that you were conscious of is larger because it becomes engorged with blood. As you put your consciousness in your hand, there's increased blood flow to your hand. So consciousness is connected to blood flow. And this is a very useful kind of clinical observation and kind of insight into many kind of phenomena. Like if a person sits at a desk and works for hours and your feet get cold. Well, why are your feet getting cold? Well, because all the blood flow is going to your dominant center, the intellectual center in the head, so your feet get cold. Just like you lose consciousness of your feet when you're deeply engaged in mental work. So there's a whole kind of science of the breath and the blood flow in the body. That type of thinking provides a wholly alternative way of trying to understand consciousness than what we have in Western science, where everybody assumes that consciousness is produced by neurological activity centered in the head, in the brain. So this is a whole alternate idea, saying, no, that's mistaken. The mind in the brain is secondary to the self within the heart and the blood flow. So it's a radically different view of consciousness. And I'm almost alone in the modern literature in arguing this perspective. Other scientists, Jim, they don't even address it as like a possible alternative. They don't even know it as a viewpoint to dismiss.
It's extraordinary in reading. I mean, I would say that it's clearly to me, I identify with the boy who saw that the emperor was wearing no clothes. When I read most of the modern discussions of consciousness, as you say, it's not like, it's not like we know this, but these ideas have been put forth by people who have studied consciousness for thousands of years. It's extraordinary to read modern conscious researchers who admit that they don't know the first thing about consciousness, but they're so sure that consciousness is produced by the brain. It's like this collective delusion, I would say, that people, and as you say, like they don't even entertain this other perspective, and it's so extraordinary reading this to see how people just aren't even kind of willing to give these ideas any consideration. Well, in large part, I don't think they know that they exist. That's part of the problem. But it's kind of funny that on some level, you would think that people would know that something like the esoteric tradition, that they have some sort of vague idea that, you know, that about, for instance, yogis and holy men have existed for thousands of years, but it's so peculiar how they don't have any curiosity about what they're saying. And really, like, I think the thing that's most extraordinary is that when you begin to read these people, it just jumps off the page in my experience.
Yes.
How incredibly lucid and intelligent these people are. How can anybody read this and not see that this is something that's about, this is something that, you know, the person who's talking about these things actually understands what they're talking about? I think there's a discernible difference when I read esoteric material.
Yeah, it's like, imagine putting Dennett, what's his first name?
Yeah, Daniel.
Daniel Dennett.
Yeah.
And reading him, which is like so intellectually heavy and obtuse and empty and says nothing,
yeah.
Eh? And then put him by Ignat, how do you say the Sufi Khan?
Hazrat Ignat Khan?
Yeah, his just so illuminating and brilliant,
yeah,
and inspirational.
Yeah.
Eh? You put them side by side and you see, oh, this guy's talking off the top of his head.
Yeah.
And this guy gets to the heart of the matter.
It's almost palpable that it's so apparent. And whenever I read In Search of the Miraculous and I read those speeches that Gurdjieff gave, his talks on things, I'm always struck. What strikes me most about them is the complete authenticity of everything he's saying, like that this is a man who's talking about things that he understands. I mean, it's just, it's so different. And as I say, when I read these modern psychological researchers on talking about consciousness, on the one hand, they're all over the map in terms of, like, there are different ideas about what's going on and how to explain consciousness and what consciousness is. And yet, when it gets down to tacks, I mean, the most honest of them will admit that they really don't know anything, but they're so sure about that this is all happening somehow in your head. I was struck the other day. I was reading some more of The Spiritual Self by Mario Beauregard and Denise O'Leary.
Spiritual Brain, isn't it?
A Spiritual Brain, sorry. Yeah,
I've been reading it too.
Oh, have you? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was the it was what why I said self was that I came across a couple of passages and people were talking about the nature of the self and people talking about it being an illusion, and, you know, and the different types of materialism, eliminative materialism, which it's all just basically an illusion that there is no self and that there is no mind. It's just, you know, another name for the workings of the brain and everything. Like, I thought of that quote about that from the holy man, I think,
Ramana Maharshi.
Maybe it's Maharshi, where he's talking about looking for the self.
Oh, no.
Yeah, anyway, but the idea that he looked for, you know, on the mountaintops. And,
Rumi, the Sufi poet.
That's Rumi, yeah. It's Rumi, and I looked for it on the mountaintops, and, you know, he looks everywhere for the self, and then he realizes it's within his own heart, you know. And I thought, boy, it's like, you know, you could just cut this out and put it in as an illustration of how psychologists and modern researchers are so deluded in terms of this idea. Oh, well, we can reason this thing away, you know. We'll logically reach the point where we'll deny the existence of the self. And what struck me most was that they were talking about they couldn't find it in the brain. So if they can't find it in the brain, it clearly doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's interesting also. It reminds me of how Gurdjieff says, most people think they have an I, like a single undivided I. But he says, really, people are like have a myriad of different little I's. And your kind of moods and thoughts and feelings change from moment to moment. So it's a stream of little eyes. And
yeah.
For Gurdjieff, one has, through awakening and self-remembering and developing your higher being bodies and things like that, we have to attain real I. So real I is there. But normally people aren't conscious at that level at all. Instead, they're caught up with the stream of little eyes, all the thoughts and feelings and sensations and happenings and so on. So they're always caught up on that level.
Yeah.
In the Bible, Christ says, man's name is Legion.
Legion, yeah.
Yeah, meaning there's all these different eyes in you. We're not a consistent one. We have no unified eye or singular eye within us. So, And that's, in mystical teachings, you realize that they actually say there is such a singular I element, like it's the Jiva Atma, which
yeah.
Prabhupada describes as infinitesimal, okay, kind of smaller than any material particle, or Blavatsky calls it the monad. The Sufis and the Gnostic Christians call it the divine spark. So, I'm losing the train of thought a little bit.
Just in terms of, Gurdjieff actually uses that quote when he's talking about the multiplicity of eyes and observing that man's name is Legion. And I remember just observing myself. That was one of the things that first convinced me of how profound these ideas were, is that I saw how there wasn't any real one eye, that there were all these different clusters of little eyes, and one minute I'd be one eye and the next minute another eye, but all the time thinking that I was I and that I called myself I, and you know, you see how this confuses people. But then the other thing is that when you're talking about this self, that infinitesimally small point within, that's, again, you know, that's by definition, that's beyond measurement or observation through the external material world. He can only understand this through self-study. So in a way, it's like trying to study something with the completely wrong tools. You know, it just can't be done. It can't be observed out there. It has to be observed within, and it can't just be observed within on our own terms. We have to develop the faculties within ourselves, which are latent within us, which are dormant within us, and we have to awaken those faculties to eventually understand this. It's not given to us on a silver platter. This isn't something that's obvious. It's something quite mysterious and something quite profound. But it's a process, and you can use others' teachings to guide you towards moving towards realizing this truth. But to know it within yourself is a process of which involves long, hard work and suffering, and really for most people isn't going to be known. But I think we can gain a sense of this through our study of ourselves, even if we're not ultimately successful in knowing ourselves in this way. I don't think I know myself this way, but it makes it's completely logical to me that this could be true. You know,
it all makes sense. It's a coherent
totally.
Scientific perspective. I mean,
yeah.
all kinds of empirical hypotheses can be derived from it.
Yeah, and I think that's what I think modern scientists and psychologists have to wake up to this if they're serious about studying consciousness, is to stop just thinking about it in terms of their heads and try to study it within themselves and try to draw on this wisdom that's been compiled through thousands and thousands of years. Like
by people who are supposed to or claim to have been enlightened.
Yeah.
So, claim to have had to have known higher states of consciousness.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you wanted to go to Paris, then, you know, if you wanted to know about Paris, you talk to someone who's been to Paris, you know, it's like getting, no one takes advantage of exploring. No one in mainstream and modern psychology really examines the esoteric literature. I mean, you just don't get that in modern psychology or education.
Yeah, and they certainly don't incorporate it into any kind of comprehensive scheme as you have. Like even the people I think that are somewhat sympathetic to it, I think are somewhat limited in the way that they've approached it, and I don't really see the value in some of the, or I see the where people have missed the boat, I guess is what I'm more want to say about certain essential elements. As I say, the heart doctrine to me, when I started studying it through your work, it started to realize, like, it was, and reading your work and helping you write about it, I realized, like, there's too many examples. It's in so many things. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, I'd read a lot of these things and hadn't even kind of noticed it in a way, like, I mean, until it was sort of pointed out to me, like, hey.
Yeah, I think we, as we read it, we just kind of take it as poetic.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
But don't think, oh no, it's not just poetic, but there's real kind of truth in it, like hidden truth. You know, I remember there's a native story where kind of God creates a universe, and then at the end of the story, he doesn't, where should they put truth?
Oh yeah.
And kind of one native says, well, we should hide it on the highest mountain. And another person says, on the furthest star. And then the last person says, no, we should hide it within our own hearts. So, within our own hearts. So people will seek everywhere in the outer world for what was within their own heart the whole time.
Yeah, and again, it's so interesting that, you know, that's a native spirituality. It's in Sufism, it's in Buddhism, it's in, you know, it's in Hinduism. I mean, it's in so many different traditions, you know. It's in the Judaic tradition, this idea that the truth is within us, you know, and that it's hidden, but, you know, that we have to open our hearts to realize this. I was going to mention one thing. We were talking about blood and consciousness and the body earlier. You know, in yoga, there's a basic exercise, which when I first started doing hatha yoga, like, I don't know, 40 years ago, there's an exercise, a sponge, where you just lie, and you move your attention. You start at your feet, and you move your attention through the various areas of your body, from the tips of your feet to your crown. And you try to be aware of each area, and you're not trying to tense the musculature. You're just trying to be aware. You're directing your attention to these areas, and as you become aware of each area, you let go and you relax, and it disappears. So you work up through your body like that. So you're working up your body, and your body kind of is disappearing as you're doing this. And it's a really interesting example of how attention and blood flow are related to your consciousness of your physical body and of your state of presence. But it's a relaxation technique too, and very, very interesting. And what I used to add on to that when it became a little more sophisticated was I tried, when I was moving through my body, I try to sometimes go through predominant emotional concerns, things that are bothering me, and I try to feel where they are in my body.
Uh-huh.
And then I give myself permission, an instruction that I'll worry about this later, or I'll be concerned about this later, something intentionality, where, you know, paradoxical intentionality,
oh, yeah,
something that you can't control, so you assume control of it to, anyway, so I that's what I try to do. I try to sense, and so I find when I observe that I can often feel, you know, oh, this is where these worries are really stored up, and I just try to be aware of them, and I try to bring them out, and then I try to let them go, and I think that's a really useful exercise that anybody can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can release emotions and things in the body through breathing and sensing ourselves.
When you relax like that, that's an ideal time, because, you know, you're not, your attention isn't being diverted, and you're able to breathe more naturally, and you're able to just sort of let go, and you know, you're not holding your breath, and you're not restricting your blood flow, so it's easier to kind of be aware of these things, and to just focus on them is I think very, very useful, because like we're all carrying around these things all the time that build up in people. And I think, as you say, I think in a lot of cases people who are depressed and anxious have a real difficulty exhaling. They hold their breath all the time, you know.
Yeah.
They're not able to, you know, the expression about letting go.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not able to let go. They're not even able to let go of their breath. And there's somebody, I can't remember who it is, that I remember reading, maintain, it may have been Wilhelm Reich, maintained that this was the origin of cancers, that cancer, people who got cancer typically didn't exhale properly. I think that's
really maybe
right, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. I remember reading that and thinking, I think there's something to this, you know.
You see the advantage of, like, oxygenation of the body as a curative process.
Yeah.
And how these kind of antioxidants kind of prevent these free radicals from affecting us if they're oxidated. So I'm sure it enhances our health greatly, is connected to the breath. And it's interesting how even in the Bible, you know, God breathes into man a living soul.
Right.
So it suggests that we're ensouled through the breath. And in Kabbalistic teachings, there are said to be 5 levels to the self, and each of those is said to be connected to a different level of the breath.
Interesting.
Yeah, the lowest level is the experience of that kind of peace, apathosol understanding of very low natural breath within the body. And then there are additional levels of the breathing that we can experience as we experience different levels of ourselves.
I think in both the Greek, I know in Greek, and I think it's also true in the Hebrew, that the root of the word for the soul is of the breath. Like pneuma is in Greek is breath and soul, both derived from that.
Oh yeah.
And I believe that's also true in Hebrew. I think I read that somewhere that, yeah, it's very interesting. I didn't know that about the 5 levels of the soul.
The breathing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I think when I had those moments of kind of shock and awakening 2 years ago, I thought I experienced to the level of the 3rd level.
Wow.
But I mean, they're hard to discern or describe. And it was highly energetic. It was like, that's where I felt the kind of wrath of God moving through me, and then everything around me began to shake.
Wow.
You know, you see in Blavatsky, everything in creation is a modification of the eternal, ceaseless breath.
Yeah.
It's the breath, the eternal, ceaseless breath, and that's a cause of spirit. So, and that's the movement, the activity. So that's kind of stepped down into us, but even in the body, it's connected to the breath, life.
Wow. Yeah, Yeah. I've had I certainly had a sense under the influence of certain psychedelics where I thought I've seen everything breathing, you know, like the earth itself is alive and breathing, and everything is moving, and everything, you know, is inhaling and exhaling. I think, you know, I'm not really sure what to what validity I would attribute that, but I think...
But it's a very distinct experience. I mean, that's widely reported. It's like everything is alive and pulsates.
Pulsating,
part of the pulse of life.
I don't really discount it because I was under the influence of psychedelic. In fact, I more the opposite. I think you do see things that under influence of certain psychedelics that do exist and that we don't see in our normal waking state. And that's sort of, you know, that's the deficit of the waking state, normal waking state, rather than, you know, something that's illusory or delusional because you're under the influence of a psychedelic drug. You know, I think that they really do open you up to certain experiences of the nature of reality that really defy, you know, conventional interpretations and observations. And that's an interesting example even there, like, you know, how we're limited by our normal waking state in terms of perceiving even the external world, you know, like we only see, as you talked about a couple of weeks ago, we only see, you know, we only interpret based on, our interpretations are based on our perceptions, and our perceptions are really, you know, they're not representations of what's out there, they're constructions, and, you know, that's the Kantian idea about the nature of reality, is that, you know, reality isn't what we see or interpret, it's like we're contained within our constructs and within our consciousness, that it imposes certain restrictions and limitations on the way that we conceive of things, and that's the power of studying yourself and transforming your consciousness, is that you can transform the nature of the meaning of life, of everything in life, the meaning of yourself and the meaning of life, because you experience things in such radically different ways that you see how the normal waking state is such a limited perspective on things, and how it really is illusory in the sense that it's only a partial picture of something that's much more complex and much more integrated and holistic than the way we normally see it as being broken up into all these little bits. But that's not reality. That's our superimposed construction of reality.
Yeah, as one wakes up, one realizes how asleep everyone is, like, including oneself. I mean, you begin to see it in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, as you begin kind of self-remember, and you begin to realize how difficult it is and how you get caught up in everything in life and you forget yourself. And there are very few moments of self-remembering. You can even go years completely forgetting about self-remembering and then come back to it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the idea of self-remembering is like a ballast in life. It's something you come back to that begins to provide stability or something within you. I was just going to mention one other thing. It's also amazing that in this debate, public debate between religion and science, which we've been talking of over the last months, you see how no one in that debate considers that, well, the issue of human consciousness is really tied into this debate, because religious teaching suggests consciousness originates out of the heart, whereas new scientific ideas connect consciousness to the brain in the head. So really, there are, like, real issues here concerning the nature of human consciousness, and the religion and science provide distinct perspectives on that issue, whether the heart doctrine or the head doctrine. And no one in that debate even considers that, or no one in that debate ever considers the science of the soul.
Yeah, well, that's just the beginning. I mean, that's definitely true. And then beyond that, I mean, what I think the most glaring thing that people just don't conceive of at all is that there isn't just religion. I mean, there's different levels of religion related to different levels of consciousness, and that even really there's different levels of science related to different levels of consciousness. People don't understand that at all. And it really, I would say, higher level religion and science, there's an integration of perspectives, which is, you know, beyond the normal understanding and the normal...
They integrate again at a different, higher level.
Yeah.
Religion and science.
Then I think that sort of goes to what I was just speaking about, is that you see something at a lower level, which appears to be separate and disparate, you know, is actually integrated at a much higher level. That you can see from that perspective how things are actually much more unified than normally understood. Speaking of forgetting things, we were going to give out the call-in numbers, and I have to go, but I do have the numbers.
I will leave it now because I do have Andrew coming on.
And, coming on, okay.
And we'll take a break in a minute.
Okay.
Also, I'll just kind of finish up with the zero point a little bit. So today we've kind of talked about the psychology of the heart again and the blood and the breath, issues of science and religion. Discussed this idea of the formula of 1-3-7. It's amazing how understanding that formula, it helps you understand other things so much because you see how normally everybody thinks dualistically, as though there's always just two parts of anything. So it's a new way of thinking to understand this idea of the 1-3-7 pattern in things. So, okay, Jim, so we had mentioned, why don't we come back next show, and I'll be through The Spiritual Brain by then.
Oh, okay.
And we'll come back to that book. And
yeah.
That'd
be good.
Yeah, and and I invite people to visit my website at www.zeropoint.ca. And I've just produced a new version of my Zero Point Teachings book with a lot of my writings on the current political scene, which I've never really posted to my website. So it's a very interesting edition of the Zero Point Teachings book. Okay, so
yeah.
Any other thoughts, Jim?
I'd just like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, no matter what your faith is, and try to remember yourselves at this time, and try to remember others. This is a very difficult time for a lot of people, especially financially, and very difficult time in a variety of ways, but a very difficult time, and you know, you reach out and try to touch somebody, and you'll be rewarded by your generosity. I think we all need to do a little bit more to help other people because everybody needs a helping hand. We'll be back. I'll be back in a couple of weeks, and have a good holiday.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll talk
to
you later.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Okay, so I will take just a couple minutes break here, and then we'll introduce our new guests. So this is Christopher Holmes at Zero Point Radio. We'll be back in a few moments.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer to truth. bbsradio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth.
Welcome, this is Christopher back again, and I'd like to thank Jim for his help in the first half of the show and introduce our guest, which is Canadian Andrew Molden. And Andrew is a medical doctor and psychiatrist, as well as a PhD psychologist, and he has most recently been elected leader of the Canadian Action Party. The Canadian Action Party is relatively unknown within Canada, unfortunately. It is what I would say is the only non-New World psychiatric disordered party. And it is the only party, in my view, that is really wanting to bring out the truth in Canada and to retain our sovereignty and to oppose all the craziness of what's happening within our countries and within the world situation. So I'm honored today to have Andrew Molden on the line. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Christopher. It's nice to be back on your show again.
Must be a whirlwind for you, as if you weren't busy enough in your life with your work on inoculations and neuroimaging and things, and now you're the head of the Canadian Action Party.
Well, it may seem scattered to some, but in my diffused mind, it's all linked together. It's basically like kind of like crawling up the neck of a beast, Christopher. Started at the tentacles, got to the hips and the waist, and then realized if you're after the head of this darn thing and you need to take out the head to change it for the greater good for humanity, then you need to go after different pieces and rungs in society that can give you a better grasp to get closer to that ultimate goal and to change things and change things for good. So linking the social political side with the medical side was one of those steps. But it does not matter what the particular issue is. The bottom line is we're all fighting the same group of individuals and the same pathology, and I like your psychiatrically disordered take on it. It is a system that is completely disordered, mentally delusional, and it needs some help, and it is seriously sick, and we're living in a sickness model that needs some help. And if it has to come politically, medically, socially, or impositionally from society as a whole, then I'm going to be over it like a dirty sock, because I want the world to be a better place.
Well, it's certainly interesting to have you as leader of the Canadian Action Party. Like, historically, CAP has focused primarily on the financial issues and wanting monetary reform. And although that's still a major part of our platform, you bring a whole new emphasis on the health of Canadians and the knowledge and expertise to look at things like, you know, inoculations and other healthcare practices. Like, no other political party has anything significant to say about the health and welfare of Canadians.
Well, they're inseparable, Christopher. You can have health, you can have wealth, or you can have health and wealth, but you take any individual who's a multi-billionaire, and on their last dying breaths and legs, they would give it all away for their health. So they go hand in hand, and unfortunately, in society as a whole, the same subversive, oppressive, usury forces that are creating havoc for us on our economic, monetary, independence of taking over the currency and its issuance and our credit in our nations, which put us under a state of usury and submission, are the same forces that are taking over our health from pharmaceuticals, from capitalism without satiation, with changing the laws of nations to bring in changes that allow profiteering at the expense of not only the health, but also the wealth of nations and nationhoods. And so they're both inexorably linked. And fighting one, you're fighting both, and they both have the same head emanating from the same neck. And the issues, are, in my mind, are linked, and it does not matter in my books, no matter which one you follow, to take it down, to expose the truth to society and wake the society up so they realize they've been lied to, they've been dumbed down, they've been purposely used and put in a state of perpetual learned helplessness that has to come out of that model on any avenue you want to take it from. Once you get that there and they do realize they've been used, they've been harmed, they've been taken advantage of, they've been prostituted, that once they realize that, hopefully that becomes the nexus through which some release will happen, that they're open to all these other issues in society that they've been lied to in ways that affected nations and the world as a whole, including world events that are both questionable and lead our countries down paths that we give up our sovereignty, we give up our human rights and freedoms, we give up our nationhood freely because we think that we are in need. We are in need. We are in need of help of each other to escape the enslavement of these global elitist self-appointed few who wish to take over nations for their greater good at our greater expense.
Yeah, it's so inconceivable to me, just the kind of monstrosity nature of it. It's like beyond what most people could conceive. Like, most people can't really imagine, like, why would people actually spray us with chemtrail spraying? You know, like, what kind of person does that? Like, I can't imagine, you know, spraying your neighbors and the people around you with poisons and just because you can get away with it and make more at the pharmaceutical counter.
No.
Like, actually doing things like that?
Well, you know, Hitler said, you tell a lie long enough and loud enough, eventually they'll believe it. And Churchill said that Churchill, I love Churchill's quips and quotes, but one thing he said that always stuck in the back of my mind was that it's very common for a well-intentioned man to come rushing into a room and trip over the truth, only to stand up, brush himself off, and scurry away as if nothing ever happened. But now it's not just tripping over the truth. We're doing these things that are to the detriment of each other and mankind without any regard whatsoever, and it is intentional. And in the legal system, you either have the mental intent, the mens rea, or the actus reus, the physical act. And without those two pieces together, you can never be held accountable for a crime. But these are crimes. These are crimes against humanity. These are crimes against humanity in the name of profiteering, in the name of actually putting individuals and states and countries and peoples under oppression and under pain and suffering as a means to derail them, deregulate them, and to go in there as their knight in shining armor and go rescue them. And when they're being rescued, they're really being lured into a den of thieves, and a fox's den, if you will, that is designed to go take more from us, and we're doing it willingly by these bunch of lies. It's sick. It's a sick, sick society that, even going back in the historical philosophers like Locke and other people, who said life is nasty, brutish, and short. It's become that way by our own free choice in a very enlightened time in history, where we have all these implements and these great technological advancements that make life easy and comfortable. We should be doing much better than we are right now, but unfortunately we're not, because there are evil people out there with lots of money, lots of forces, and they don't see us as any more than numbers in the game, and we're just like ants on the ground that can be stepped on, and there's no valuation whatsoever for humanity. It's lost its spirituality. It's lost its connection to the universe. It's lost its connection and even like recognition of the zero point, which your show is basically about.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to have, physicist Mark Cummings called it poverty consciousness. Like, they have this ideal that the Earth can only sustain 500 million, so we better murder off 6 billion so that we can be at 500 million. And it's like, well, here we are at 6 billion, and there could easily be enough of everything for everyone in the world if we had a sane society run by humane people. We could we can sustain 6 billion quite easily. It's these elites themselves have created all these crises. The crises in oil, which never had to be. You just have alcohol cars, you know. so many things are completely artificial. They create this huge burden on the health of the health departments of nations by spreading and creating diseases themselves.
Yeah, well, it's the way it is. When you've lost your fundamental regard for the sanctity of life and the value of humanity as individuals and groups and nations, then you have no qualms walking in there and doing very nasty things that actually make people have pain and suffering by design, not only to profit off of it, but you basically flip the dice and say, I don't care whether this person dies or this group dies, or if I go use depleted uranium and whack out the entire Middle East with this stuff, or you put crazy poisons in the water and food and genetically modified foods, or you inject them with poisons and toxins and heavy metals, and you don't care because, really, for the rest of us, we're just seen as a bunch of cattle. And when you have people who are in power and controls of the checks and balances of societies who have that much power, and they have that much disregard, and they have these inane beliefs that the planet's overpopulated and we're making a mess of it and they want to get rid of us, then we are put into this state of living the way we are right now in ways that are being pushed upon us. They see, you know, our greatest exploding aspect of demographics in society today is the elderly population. The baby boomers are coming to age. This system is in crisis. We do not have the resources to take care of these people. The population is not built up beneath that to catch up with this. And now society has to deal with this. So, you know, I'll say this to you bluntly. They know what they're doing. They know by putting aluminum in these darn vaccines for influenza, they mandate all these people have to have. They know they're making them demented. They know they're causing cancers. They know they're killing them. We were not supposed to have one person in two if you're male to die of cancer and one person in three if you're female to have cancer. We weren't supposed to have one person in 13 develop Alzheimer's disease after the age of 65. We weren't meant to have one person in six with learning disabilities, a 2% sudden death, or 15% attention deficit, or one in 150 or one in 87 with autism. We weren't meant to have these numbers, or one in nine with asthma. This is a sick, sick society that, you know, I don't know where they're going with this, but unless society comes together and takes a hold of this and starts realizing they're being lied to their own detriment by people who control the forces behind curtains like the Wizard of Oz, and unless they realize that's going on and stand up and stand out and start looking for answers themselves rather than sitting there and being spoon-fed what they believe to be true off of television shows that are actually owned by these same individuals, then we are lost, and these things will continue, and it's only going to get worse. And if they want 500 million on the planet, that's all there will be. And the only way to do that without decimating the planet is to have some global crisis where you're going to go throw some stuff in everybody, and then a lot of people are going to get sick. When this happened in Poland last year, when they went out there and tested their avian flu vaccine for 300-some-odd transients in Poland, 260 of them died in less than a week. Now, this is the stuff that's going on. The fact that it even happened is frightening. And when you now have, even in countries like the Philippines, where they are overpopulated to a certain extent and there's a shortage of food supply, the only reason is the rest of the world and developed worlds aren't coming to their aid or helping them out. When they go out there and provide free vaccinations for hepatitis B to all these teenage girls, and the girls are coming back with antibodies against human chorionic gonadotropin, which is required to have a successful implantation of a fetus in the uterus, they're purposely sterilizing these people, and that is intentional, and that is men in positions of authority using devices that exist in society, including the United Nations and UNICEF and other organizations, to the detriment of mankind by people imposing their will subversively without our consent or knowledge. And that should frighten people, but they're not frightened because they don't know. And until they take the chance, time to go learn, then this is going to continue. And the way it's and where it's marching to right now, Christopher, you know, we know, and many people are waking up to this. They have a globalized North American Union that they want to link us all up together and put us all there working for usury under this sort of common elitist group who are self-appointed, have no checks and balances, no accountability, no democracy whatsoever, and this is feudalism. And this is a step back to the pre-industrial ages, and it's happening as we speak, and it's frightening.
Yeah, it is. It is. I feel we're almost like in a period where in Germany when Hitler was rising to power, and it was like after the war, all the people said, well, we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know what was going on. And it was like people don't see it. Like this is happening now within our society.
Yeah, and the reason why people don't see it is they choose not to see it. It's there to be seen. However, when you have been, nation has learned, and people have learned to, they get all their information from their the TV shows. Well, the news is skewed. It's owned by the same people who are actually propagating this craziness. And when you don't stand up and go out there and find the information that's freely available for you, then you will not know. And you wake up one day and say, heck, what happened? In Germany, this is a funny story about Martin Niemöller, who said the following about the Nazis regime. He was a Lutheran minister. He said, in Germany, they came first for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jewish people, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't Jewish. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. And then they came for the Catholics, and I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. But then they came for me, and by that time, no one was left to speak up. It's the responsibility of us all to speak up, and to, if we don't speak up together now and do something, it'll be too late, and that's where we're headed. And we're at that too late critical moment in the here and now, today, at the turn of 2009, and it's coming fast, and it's going to catch the globe and North America by surprise. And when they wake up and they'll say, how'd this happen, it's not going to do anyone any good to say, I told you so, and I don't want to be in that state. And neither is the Canadian Action Party, neither is North America. And so we need to come up, wake up, and stand together and move forward, because our completely what we have now in power in our countries, these options between liberals or conservatives or Republicans and Democrats, they're apples and apples, and they are controlled, they are puppeted, they are infiltrated, and they are not our best interest. And we look like we democratically elect one group or another. There's no democracy there whatsoever. The same groups who actually want to enslave us have control of those realms. We need to rip the system apart and start all over. And if we don't do that, we have nowhere to go but downwards, and that's where we're headed.
Yeah, it is scary time. I'm scared not just personally, but like for our children and grandchildren and humankind. It's horrific what's being done around the world at this time with these wars and the criminal invasions of the Middle East. And
they're lying.
The provocations that the, like the India thing, which seems to again to be some kind of black cover, undercover operation, and you know, in India, again, it was another staged event of some kind. You know, so many lies. These people themselves perpetrate so many of these terrorist scares, and then they use that to enslave us.
They do, and they know how, because they recognize this whole game is a game of numbers, and the numbers and the masses are lost sheep. And they're not listening, and they're not looking, and they're being led astray, and collectively as a mass, they're being led into a den to their own detriment. And you can have a few enlightened individuals amongst the entire herd, but a few enlightened individuals is not enough to stop the herd from going over the cliff or going into their own demise. And so those who perpetrate this against us know this, and those of us who are doing our best to sort of scream from the mountains, or yell like the Noahs that the flood is coming, and it is here, and it's raining, and the water's before their very eyes, and they don't see it. And sometimes I say to my colleagues, they ask me, well, why are you doing this, Andrew? And I say to them, well, look, have you ever tried to explain the concept of a raindrop to a fish that spent its whole life growing up the bottom of the ocean? It's all around them. They don't know the truth, because they figure what is real is what they know. So it's a battle of awareness, and awareness comes from consistency of message, and strengthen message, and actually strengthen numbers. And with each individual new soul you grab, who grasps it, conceives it, arrives at their own conclusions, they become another sort of raindrop out there to go shine this piece to those who are stuck in the depths of their own demise, that they're being led there themselves, and they've been there all their lives. It is scary, Christopher. It is frightening. It is distasteful. It is dehumanizing to recognize it and feel it and actually walk through it and see between the lines the lies and be able to recognize what is true and what's not true, whether being misled and whether being propagandized to their own detriment. And it's sad. It's like being a caring parent for and watching from the outside of the fence of a schoolyard and all the children coming out of recess, and like one in five of them are dropping through a hole in the ground to their own demise, and you're screaming at the top of your lungs and no one's listening. They keep doing it every day.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. I go to the supermarkets and I see these people with all their diet drinks, knowing that they all have aspartame in it and that these are causing cancers and brain degeneration. And it's called the Rumsfeld's plague.
Yeah.
All the illnesses being caused by aspartame. And everybody's buying it up for their children and
they don't realize it's not just the aspartame, you know, the aluminum cans we use, the water treatment plants that we use to get our water. They use aluminum to flocculate the water. So aluminum basically acts as a heavy a metal that has a certain electrical charge that pulls out clumps of impurities in the water and drops them like a big collective mass at the bottom of the water. But when the water gets bottled and sent off to us with these with aluminum left over electrophysiologically, that same clumping it does to stuff in water causes the same sort of clumping happening in our blood. It creates sludge, and it makes us sick from every known illness and cancer to mankind. But we do it with our water. We do it with our food. We do it with our food additives. We do it with the vaccines. We do it with everything else we put in our body and society as a whole and the pollution we do there, and all this stuff adds up. Mankind was not supposed to be one person in two with cancer. You know, this is the funny thing as well. If society, look at this. Wait a minute here. All these lung cancers were so high during the 1930s and 40s, and we figured, well, because celebrities are actually smoking on TV, let's get rid of celebrity smoking. And, you know, we've had a significant drop in the incidence and prevalence of smoking. Yet the incidence and prevalence of lung cancer has gone up. What are we doing?
Wow, really?
It's statistically significant. But the numbers have become atrocious. The things that happen to society as a whole, we're not supposed to live this way. It's not supposed to be this nasty, brutish, and path to ill health. But those who wish to capitalize on us and see us as nothing more than being in their way at this point, we have built them their roads, they've got their temples, they've got their pyramids, they just want to get rid of us now. And, you know, you can't do it blatantly. You can't go nuclear bomb everybody because you blow up the planet you want to live in. You've got to find these subversive ways to go get rid of them. And if you're not getting rid of them, well, then you're rising off them along the way. And we are a sick society built on a sickness model, and those in power want it because that way we buy their stuff and make some happy. Our usefulness is over at a certain age, then they want us off the planet. And that's sick. And it's reality. It's not some rantings of Dr. Molden or other people. It's the God's honest truth. And
now known by increasing, like, tens of millions of people. Like, people around the world are waking up to it. I mean, that's...
You know, I don't know how more profound can it get, Christopher, that when the Journal of the American Medical Association, the British Medical Journal, the Canadian Medical Association Journal, all these international high-reputed medical journals are saying, Western medicine that's currently practiced is the number one cause of death ahead of heart attack, stroke, cancer, HIV combined. We had 28,000 deaths last year in Canada from adverse effects of Western medicine and pharmaceutical, 700,000 in the United States, and in Canada we had 14 million doctor visits for relief of adverse effects of pharmaceuticals that we're actually, as a government, are using our taxpaying dollars to go out there and advertise. $300 million for Gardasil. It's causing strokes in everybody, sludging of the blood. All this stuff does. But it's not the individual thing that's safe or not. When you add them all together into a toxic soup in the body, you can add a bitter lemon to a big glass of water. The water will not taste like a bitter lemon. You can add several other bitters to it, and collectively, all those individual bitters can be said, well, it's individually that bitter is safe. But you put them all collectively together in a soup, collectively they cause damage and to change. The human body is no different. It's 80% water. You throw all these things out there and license them as society and says that the Food and Drug Administration says this or that is safe. That's fine as individual things, but what happens when you put them all together? No one's done a study, but it's in our air, it's in the chemtrails, it's in our water, it's in our food, it's in the vaccines, it's in everything we become exposed to in society. And when those things come together, that's a multivariate analysis causing multivariate diseases across the board. And, you know, what we're doing with small pieces is causing greater harm. And everyone's saying, I don't know why this is happening. Well, come on. It's quite clear how it's happening. And beyond that, it's very disconcerting to realize that some of it is happening with intent. And that's just the basic way we look at each other in society. We care for one group and we don't care for another. Those in charge don't care about us anymore, and they think that we're a burden. So what do you do when you have a bunch of termites in your house? Well, you exterminate them slowly or quickly, depending on what the social order is that allows what to be acceptable in that society. And we are being exterminated, and we are being led down the garden path, and it is slavery, usury, to our own detriment. And without waking up, nothing will happen. I agree. psychiatrically disordered across the board, and the only way we can fix it, Christopher, is for us to come together, wake up, alert each other, and stand together, stand united, because the only way this other group has power over us is we give that powerful willingness to them. The biggest threat to democracy is democracy itself. An organized, collective, informed population who stands together is the biggest threat, not terrorism. That's the biggest threat to these elitist groups. And collectively, that's the only way we can take this back. And in Canada, I'm fully intending on having the Canadian Action Party be that vehicle and be that light and be that beacon and be that path to truth, that we do actually take it back, because the shenanigans we see going on in our political system as it is now, it is just a ruse of ridiculousness, silliness, if you will, that if you can't see past what's going on now, they're not the best interest of society as a whole. They have their own best interest, protecting their own backsides and entrenching their own positions in power. It's got nothing but to do with power, about your own entrenchment, about your own advancement, about securing anything for yourself. It's doing something for society as a whole. And these people are so caught up in this world globalization scheme that, you know, that's not good for anyone in Canada. And these both liberal and political party, liberal and conservative parties, are down these paths. And NDP, to a certain extent, if they're not talking about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, if they're not talking about deep economic integration, if they're not talking about the North American Union, and if not demanding truth for things that we all see that are true and they're not talking about, then they are lying to you by a willful omission. And those are not the people you want leading your nation down the garden path, because what they do not say is more powerful than what they do say, and they're not telling you the truth.
You have to put it simply, throw the bums out. It's terrible. I always thought, it's amazing. I only woke up 2 years ago. And until then, really, I mean, I thought there might be some corruption in the government and such, but I had no idea what a criminal elite have kind of taken over our countries. I had no idea. You know, I thought the news was an attempt to be fair in presentation. I had no idea that the whole thing was systematically created as a propaganda. I mean, they've created a whole false consciousness system that the people in around the world believe that the terrorist threat is Arab Muslims. And it's got nothing to do with that. It's like Santa Claus.
It's Santa Claus, really. I'm looking for the Easter Bunny. But the funny thing is that it was not, and from my perspective and my background as well, this is not my background, but I got up to the highest echelons of organized medicine in Canada, the highest echelons, and on my way to a great career and a great place to be. But we're seeing the corruption at that level and the elitism, and it just dripped of this self-important arrogance that has got more to do with individual advancement than advancement of the greater good. They sell it as the greater good, but that was quite disconcerting, and that was the beginning of my wake-up call. And when you go from there and you start seeing across the board in many different spheres and sectors of society that in order to change things for the greater good, you have to change the entire system, because the system is oppressive to the individuals and the betterment of mankind. And it's become oppressive, it's become manufactured, it's become a propaganda machine, it's become a tool to enslave by delusion, lie, misconception, and misinformation, that we have a society living buying a bunch of used cars, thinking that they're getting Cadillacs, and they have to wake up. And so whether you woke up 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 10 years ago, or you wake up 2-3 years from now, it only would change if we all wake up together and stand together and recognize we are fighting a common foe, even those who are stuck within the system, caught in its tentacles, masters to the beast, if you will. Even those individuals are crying for help. They just don't know how to get out of it. But the only way out of it is that the people who run and control and provide the true power and sovereignty in a nation, that they all wake up together and stand together. And it's kind of like having 20 people in an elevator. They're all looking towards the back, and the door opens to the other side. But if you come in there and you see everyone looking at the back, you feel compelled as a social norm to join the crowd.
That's
the wrong thing. But,
I've seen that done as a...
It's kind of silly, but that's the same thing. But that's fashion as well. Fashion statements, everyone wants to fit in. But it's the 12th monkey syndrome. Eventually, you know, you get a critical mass and everyone's doing it, so this is the way it's done, and they move forward. So getting to that sort of critical mass to have a paradigm shift in society requires individuals who are a bit enlightened and do see it for what it truly is, and to stand the ground and to speak as often, not be ashamed, not be bashful, and to try to enlighten the fellow man and provide them the means and resources, not sell them anything. You cannot sell the truth to another individual. They have to grasp the truth themselves. And once they grasp the truth themselves and appreciate it by their own free cognition and will, then that becomes an immutable force and another beacon of light to go move other people the same way. Because if you sell a bill of goods to somebody, then someone will buy them back the other way by selling them a different bill of goods. You can't sell people the truth. They have to appreciate it themselves. And all you really can do is emulate it for them and be firm and consistent and provide the information of which a rational human being can make the determination themselves. And that's where we're at as a group. And that's what your radio show is about on multiple spheres, beyond simply contemporary social political society, but also into the spiritual realm of things. It's half the battle as well, that we've lost our connection with our spirituality. Don't see us as interconnected. We don't see a universal consciousness anymore. We don't see what we do to ourselves or our little area here has global effects across the board in a much broader scheme of things. Until we get back to the mentality of doing for others as we have others doing for ourselves, it's going to be a calamitous mess. But we can get there, and people want to be there. They just need to be shown the way. But right now they're being led down the garden path by evil people with evil intent, with evil thoughts and evil plans, and it is straight evil incarnate. And you can be mad about it. You can call a spade, but calling a spade or being mad about it is not going to change anything. We need the populace as a whole to wake up, and whatever it takes on any sphere, to go out there and continue talking, and shows like yours do exactly that. We keep hammering this drum, and eventually more people get the beat, and eventually we'll create an orchestra, and eventually the strings and the wind instruments come together, and finally we'll have enough of an orchestra to make a harmonic sound that would be the critical mass to switch us over to actually, okay, here's now we have control. Let's move forward as one.
Well, the Canadian Action Party is a perfect vehicle for trying to unite with people concerned about different issues within our society, whether it be the wars or the attempts to restrict our health care or the inoculation programs. In the Canadian Action Party, it's like a truth party in Canada, and it is a breath of fresh air. And you've certainly, you're facing, you're David facing Goliath, Andrew, in your quest to...
But, you know, as a boy from Northern Ontario, probably has more education than his own good. I'm also a bit thick in the head. Maybe I fell too many times off my horse growing up. I don't know. Banged my head around a bit. I'm stubborn, but I'm also a humanist, and I also have a conscience, and I also have integrity, and there's also honesty in me, and there's a genuine intent to do work for my fellow man, because I'm not bringing anything I collect in this planet away from me when I die like everyone else is. So there's got to be more to this life than actually collecting material possessions, and I'm all intent on doing the right thing, and I'm quite convinced our fellow men and women are intent on doing the right thing as well. They've just lost their way. So David and Goliath, fair enough. All you need is a pebble. But I do have that pebble. We have that pebble.
Yeah.
And that light and life is in us all, and it just needs to be lit up again because it's been lost, and people have been so caught up in the calamities that these nefarious forces have imposed upon us to make our lives nasty, brutish, and short, and calamitous, and you have the even fundamental nature, the whole fabric of society, the family unit has been eroded. The nuclear family does not exist anymore, and you have these albatross laws and family law that actually do not look at the best interest of the children anymore. You have the children not having equal access to the parents. The parents are trying to stay together. They're being pushed under pressure by usury. They're paying taxes they don't need to. We're giving our money and 17 cents on the dollar in taxes to foreign interests and private banks and the banks of the Canadian society as a whole. And a lot of these stresses on the family unit and society would go away if we just went back to our own Bank of Canada, but we don't get that either. But again, the same usury forces that want a North American unionize us control that too. So all these things are connected, and it is a David and Goliath battle, but being Davidic is something within us all, and the pebble in that slingshot becomes more poignant in its path, its trajectory, as well as its mass and size, as more and more individuals waken up and join in this battle and gather and collect. And that's what the Canadian Action Party is in the process of doing now. We're creating our own broadcasting system because obviously the media is owned by these groups that have actually usurped it. We get a singular message across the nation. So we know we need to amass and get a message out there that's the truth. And the Canadian Action Party stands for the truth on multiple spheres. And it's the only party in Canada that's actually talking about these critical issues germane to the sovereignty and safety and future of our nation, that no one knows that these things are going on. Our politicians are not talking about it, but they're actively engaged in it behind closed doors. This is a calamity, and we need access to the people. Speak truth. You need a vehicle to get the truth out there. So we'll create those vehicles. We'll create those means, and we'll create the voices of people who are enlightened who want to go talk at the water coolers at work and pass his messages on to the fellow man, and we'll create that Davidic rock, and we'll fell this Goliath, and we'll become a model for the world, because we'll show the world that Canada, in its unified citizenry, can beat these people who want to put us under usury and suppression and take over our nationhood, which we have fought since Confederation to hold on to, and over dead bodies, I'll say, myself included, well, I stand by idly and let this happen, because the calamities and the death and disability and pain and suffering that we're willfully putting on each other, socially, medically, physically, environmentally, and fiscally, has got to stop, and it has to stop now. And I'm not going to let it stand there, and many other people around Canada will not. The Canadian Action Party is becoming that vehicle. It always was that vehicle. It just needs a little bit of light. So we're going to light up, and I'm sure people have had enough of the futility of this craziness, this grade school antics we see happening in our governance and our elected officials of the land. Enough is enough is enough. We're not going to sit around anymore and wait for somebody to change it. They could change it. We change it by now. There is ways to change it. They're just not doing it. They're not talking about it. They're not speaking about it. They're not taking any action. Well, we need action. We need to do something about it, and we need to come together, because they're not doing it for us. Their systems have been corrupted, so we need to create a new system from the bottom floor up, and Canadian Action Party, exactly that. We're at the bottom floor. We'll build it together by the people, of the people, for the people, and we'll become the system that we can't seem to fix from the outside in, because it needs to be fixed from the very ground floor up.
Yeah, so we got to get the message out. Please, Andrew, could you give out, you have a traditional CAP website, and then you have a new one that you've created. Could you give those web addresses out? And
certainly. The standard, our core website for Canadian Action Party is canadianactionparty.ca, and we are creating a new one, which is an addition to the main Canadian Action Party site called canadianactionparty.net. We're building it daily. We'll have our live broadcasting TV station through that particular site. We'll provide informative as well as educational as well as entertainment means through there in time as we get going. It's the .net site is a means to provide people a forum to have community town hall meetings across the nation, to unite and link with other people seeking truth and justice and accountability and transparency in society, to bring a CAP family together, a Canadian Action Party family together, that makes us work together as individuals and allow us to communicate with each other and to share and experience Canadian society and our concerns, that actually let the means for truth to come out, rather than us all sort of like being fractionated and segregated, hearing the same message, figuring that we're all helpless. We're not helpless. And so CanadianActionParty.net is a new one. It's being built and changing daily, and CanadianActionParty.ca is the old one, and we welcome all new members and those who want to wake up, stand out, and stand on behalf of a dying nation. Our nation is threatened. It is dying. It is being attacked maliciously by subversive forces as we speak daily behind closed doors with no accountability and transparency, and unless we come together, unless you come and find the right path to truth, there will be no nation left to stand for, and the Canadian Action Party is the vehicle to save this great nation on behalf of the people who have died in war and peace before us, to save this and give us the values and future and great prosperity we truly have from within, not from without.
So one of the first objectives is, I guess, to increase our membership. You have about 1,000 members at this time, and really as the word spreads, we want to increase the membership, and I do encourage people to visit those websites. I think membership is only $10, and then from there, I guess, Andrew, we're wanting to organize local, like within each electoral district, to organize a committee. What are they called in the local committees?
They're called electoral district associations.
Yeah, okay, to form those, like to try to bring together CAP members in each electoral district to form such a committee. And we've just had an election, but the CAP was ill-prepared for this election, and it was brought up illegally so quickly upon us, it really gave us no time during the time while the leadership was changing. So now's the time where we need to be organizing to prepare for what will likely be another election within a year or two, I would expect.
Yeah, there probably will be, and sometimes I find it's hard to keep up with myself, being myself, Christopher, but I know the truth that is within me, and I know the integrity within me, I know the passion that's within me, and I know the people that are around me, and I know the society and this nation that we live in, and I know we will succeed. And the only way to succeed at changing a sick system is to become the system itself. And to do so in Canadian democracy, you need to get members elected. You need to get a voice out there. You need to bypass the media blocks that favor the few, which are basically you're putting into power the same people who are actually putting you into usury, not maliciously on their own, but their whole parties have been subverted and corrupted. I have every intent of achieving this goal of getting us 308 electoral district associations. Now, if you have, you live in a riding area that you elect an MP, then you're in an area for an electoral district, the electoral district association, and we are looking for those 308 ridings across Canada to put those together, because the next time it comes for an election, we're going to have both the access to the media, our way out there, and our means to go galvanize this nation, because it may be the last nation, last federal election you have for Canada as a whole. Because this North American Union is imminent, it's coming, and it is planned, and your Canada, as you know it, is not going to exist. It truly is not going to exist. We've been saying this for years. It's happening incrementally. It's happening exponentially now. Its rate of incline is getting ready to zenith. And you see all the changes to the fabric of our legislation and judiciary and laws of our land being made by regulatory bodies that have nothing to do with forebuying of Canadian people. It's got to do with corporatocracy, corporations, international people and bodies who have more plans for themselves and not for us. And when you have the Security and Prosperity Partnership going through here in Canada, which is the constitution for the North American Union, and as that's gone through, and corporations have got more control in our countries than we do as individuals, and you've had the profits of these corporations go 45% by the wages of the working man and woman when they get up 3%, this is where we're headed. And this cannot continue. And the only way to stop it is to create the infrastructure to democratically elect the right people outside of these corrupted political parties. Corrupted, I use that in the terms of they're controlled by the forces that really want to take over and put us under one world government. It's not going to happen over my dead body, and I will find other people who will stand up with valor and integrity for this nation, because it is a proud nation built by proud individuals and has struggled and exists, and it should be a beacon of light for the world, and I'm not going to sit back idly and watch it go down the tubes, because it's going down the tubes silently, and our own democratically elected officials are completely 100% complicit in it, because in the very fact of that they're not talking about this and they're doing it behind closed doors is a very example of the truth that they're actually involved in this as well. Prime Minister Paul Martin signed down the Security and Prosperity Partnership in 2005. He sold our nation out. No one since liberal or conservative has been talking about it, but they're moving forward to doing this. This is going on, ladies and gentlemen, and you do not have any other option here. I would get on any other political party here in Canada that could take control of the realm for us, but there is none. So those that are existing are small. We'll find means to coalesce them together into one group. I will make coalitions with our team and our National Executive Canadian National Party to build this party up to be the strength and the valor and integrity of the people of Canada, take Canada back for Canada, and we move forward and take control of the kindergarten status we were being seen made a mockery of our democracy, and our Parliament Hill was turning into five-star hotels for individuals who have more intent of turning our parliamentary system into a boardroom rather than a democratic system that actually is accountable in its governance and listening to the people who elected it into power.
And even as the Canadian Action Party message gets out there and wakes people up, people will start putting more demands on the other parties to speak the truth, and will begin to see their dishonesty. Because I'm sure many people get into these parties who are well-intentioned and don't really understand what they're getting into.
Wholeheartedly. You know, I have every intent as well. As we gain momentum and as we move forward, and we will gain momentum and we will move forward, I have no qualms whatsoever of cherry-picking well-intentioned, integrity-minded individuals from other parties who also see the system they're in as being sick. It's an orchard that's got a bunch of bad apples on it, and the bad apples are becoming an applesauce that's making the society sick and bitter. And there are individuals in there that are good apples stuck in the fray. We'll go grab them, and we'll bring them over to our side, and we'll move forward together. Even individuals in Senate, Romeo Dallaire, by example, he saw this craziness when he was over in Rwanda. When he was over in Rwanda, you know, he sees that even well-intentioned having the ability to go help a nation is being macheted to death by these other forces in these countries. that even the international community, you can go in there and decimate the countries like Iraq at the flick of a switch and the flick of a pen. But, you know, in countries that don't want to help, you know, even well-intentioned individuals like Romeo Dallaire is powerless, and though he's given the position of power, they are stuck in the same system we are. So we need to become that system, and that system can do a lot of good. However, it'll only do good if the people with the positions of power and the checks and balances that control these heads of state and heads of infrastructure have the best intentions for the fellow man. And there are people like that out there, and they are stuck in a system. They're trying to do their own individual good because they've become a lost voice in a democratically elected member of parliament in House of Commons. They are a lone voice that really are as ineffectual as we are as a society because we're relying on these individuals and heads of state to do the bidding for our best interests. They're not. And so we'll find those people, we'll bring them to us, and we'll come together as a whole new entity in this Canadian society, and we'll take this thing over and show the world how a country can be run by itself from within and not run and imposed from without. And we will do it, and I have every intention of succeeding.
It's amazing how it comes back so much to awareness. And like so many people, if they began to learn more of the truth, like the main problem seems so much people read the trash newspapers and watch TV and listen to the corporate radio. And it's created this completely false consciousness system. It's good that you're trying to create your own media. I think that's really important. But then I guess you want more and more written material out there. Like, it would be interesting if the CAP had its own newspaper that was released different places around the country, and you gave people the real news, you know, like the fake news versus the real news.
Well, you know, we already live in that sort of like a delusionary, illusory system, but we just had a... We just had my opening letter to the party after being elected, published in the Canadian Canadian nationalist newspaper. And this is a nation, and this is a nationalist party, and we stand for the citizens of the country and the country's sovereignty, not the corporate elite and the self-appointed banking and intellectual elite who figure they have the mandate to run the world by their own free will because they figure we're not good enough to do it ourselves. We're not good enough to do it ourselves because they've made it a living hell for us. So we will create the media we need. We will create our newspaper we need. We will create the news stories we need, because when you start exposing truth and people start seeing it and see how profoundly they've been adversely affected by following blindly these people and forces who've been lying to them from every nuance that's been profoundly affecting them, once you start getting that awareness to them and giving them solutions, and we don't just have... We're not complaining here from Canadian Action Party. We have solutions. We have very profound solutions on multiple spheres that cut across health and wealth. And as these start coming out and people start realizing they've been lied to, they've been taken advantage of, and they follow blindly, then the whole system begins to crack at its seams and it'll fall apart, and you'll have a destitute nation looking for a pathway out and a vehicle out, and the Canadian Action Party is that safety net foundation that we're forming, and it will get full as more and more people break free from this system of lies and deceit and corruption and disillusion and disarray to come back to a position of health and wealth and sovereignty and happiness and security and prosperity from within, not from those who want to impose it on us. And it's coming. And I have every intent that we will succeed. But the awareness is key. The unification is key. And the democratically involved electorate is key. When you have 30% of the population not even voting anymore because, you know, they figure that, you know, they're not going to make a difference, that is a signature of the sickness by which even society has realized this whole system is a mess. I won't make a difference. Well, they can make a difference. Every vote makes a difference. Every individual, even taking 5 minutes a month to come in and say hello, join up, sign up, be a part, just learn something new, and even just mention the name Canadian Action Party to a fellow a colleague, that in and of itself is a step in the right direction. It takes maybe 30 seconds of your day. If people can do that, then we have hope. And if they want to remain silent and follow the status quo and do nothing, then they have no hope and they have no one to blame but themselves. But here, I don't care about blaming. I don't care about preaching. All I care about is this nation and its future and its sovereignty and the best interests of our fellow man. And I will stand that guard. I will stand it till my feet are bare down to the bones. And I will walk every walk I have to. And I'll find every willing soul to take that walk with us, because this is a crisis. It's imminent, and it's happening at the very moment we speak, and it's going to come to a crashing halt in very profound ways, in ways that I don't even want to try to describe, but the calamity is coming, and they have to impose another calamity for things to move forward in,
yeah.
in the way they want to go. It is coming. It is coming. I don't want to be like Noah telling you it's the storms are coming and it's going to flood. It is coming in such a profound dereliction of humanity way that's going to be imposed nefariously on society as a whole, and they're going to wake up one day and say, wow, that where did that come from?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to be in that position. I want to stop it before it gets there, and we can do it as a nation. We will do it, and we're starting to do it starting today. And
it's like there's forces like in the States. I mean, there's a whole movement, truth movement now in the States, and throughout the world is like groups of people in different countries are waking up to what's been done. So it's
not
a worldwide movement. It's not just...
It is. And
yeah.
It's exciting because, and it's gaining momentum. Ron Paul in the United States is critical to that. And, you know, people are galvanized and resonate with those individuals because, you know the truth. When you hear the truth and you see the truth and he speaks the truth, you can look a fellow human being in the eye and hear in the intonations of their voice. There's no hesitation. There's no reservation. There's no hiding behind closed doors. They're not going in and taking an oath under testimony to look into truth, for example, by 911 when you're being your best friend in there, when you're head of a state. What do you got to hide? Truth and accountability and transparency are key. Multiple nations said that. Multiple nations, heads of state, say that. There is a movement moving through the corridors of society as a whole, crossing national borders, a counterforce, if you will, to this wave of oppression and suppression and usury these globalization, elitist, dark ages individuals want to put us into. And we're going against it. And it is coming. And it's nice to see that happening, but it's nowhere near where it's got to be to create the critical mass to actually create a powerful force. Now, you don't want to create a powerful force out of malice, out of implements, or out of terror, or out of using militarization. Every force begets an equal and opposite reactionary force in society. You can build this thing and stop it with love, if you will, of genuine concern and compassion for your fellow man by being aware and standing united and coming together and saying no. It's a simple vote,
yeah.
And the vote can become united. And that in of itself is a powerful, soft-spoken wave of saying, I'm not taking it anymore. And you can only get to that point if you are aware. And that's all it takes to take back what we're giving them freely.
And it's like we're calling on Canadians to stand up and to their own oaths and duties. Like, you take the RCMP and the CSIS and the military intelligence. All of these people are supposed to protect our country against enemies, foreign and domestic. Like, these people, you know, they need to rise. Why did the RCMP, you know, they've not exposed 9/11. They've hidden it. You know, they're not serving the Canadian public anymore. We need our own military and police personnel to oppose this within their ranks.
Well, we do. And if you look at the structure of society, it kind of like takes on that New World Order pyramid. You have the top of the pyramid, your democratically elected officials, and these people are taken out. They're puppeteers, if you will. You have down to one corner, you have the public service, which has been corrupted by these forces that have taken control of that arm, and you have the other corner.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew Molden, and we need to tie up the few loose ends here. So it was CanadianActionParty.ca, the second website, Andrew, was...
CanadianActionParty.net.
.net. And I hope, Andrew, early in the new year, we might get you back and we'll open up the phone lines for the whole show.
Wonderful. That's when my vaccine stuff's going in the United States Federal Circuit Courts, and that's going to be a big wake-up call for them all, because when they realize they've been lied to, it's the opening corridor. They've been lied many different ways. Let's go look at the truth, and let's go...
Thank you for having courage, Andrew, and being there for us as Canadians, and we wish you the best.
We're all together. Courageous society. We'll do it. God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, BBS Radio. This is Christopher Holmes. This was another session of Zero Point Radio. We'll be back in 2 weeks. remember yourself. Let's keep have a new heart. Find a new heart. Find the courage to face this monstrosity beast of our times.